You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why, the Total Christmas Podcast is here. Run the theme music!
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you!
What's this? What's this?
Well, says me, my trusty old Red Ryder Carbine Action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. Merry Christmas. I'm your host, Jack. Let's do the interactive bit. You ready? Here it comes. Now have a look at this. Do you know what that is? Yeah, it is. Do you know what? Guess what I got it? Car boot sale, £2.50. Couldn't believe it. He wanted £3. I said, I'll give you £2. He said £2.50. Next thing I know, I'm at home with it, playing with it. Fantastic. And scene. How was that? Something, innit? So, I've got a packed show for you. And I was away last time when the episode came out. This time, I've just got back from being away. So, I hope you enjoy it. It's going to be something. Hopefully, we'll find out, won't we? Shall we? Yeah, let's do this. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. I tell you what, I feel like I'm taking a real big gamble starting with the quiz as my first segment, because I figure a lot of people will be like, well, I've done the quiz now, don't have to listen to the rest of his crap. And that's fine, if that's how you want to live your life. Most of us are here for the long haul. Last week's scores. Do you know what, this first one, he only just got it in. He sent it in this morning. Yeah, he got 3 points. Mark Westcott. Do you know what, that was the lowest out of anyone. I bet he regrets doing it now. But well done, Mark. Stand up and be proud. With 4 points, we got Pamela Wootton, John Gomez and Guy Sawyer. 5 points, we have David Ferguson, Mary Pulte and Frank Talley. 6 points, Martin Goodman, Benji Pearson and Jack Unverfirth. I think I only got 6 points, didn't I? So yeah, I'm the same as those guys. But with 7 points, we got Nicola McLean, Shelley Arnold and Mike Westphal. Yeah, so well done for you three for getting 7 points. It was a tricky one last episode. You might consider this one a tricky one. I don't know. Right. We've got a mix this week, but a lot of them are about music. Okay, first question, right? What is the most traditional shape for a Mexican Christmas piñata? Now, I'm saying Mexican Christmas piñata, but really, piñatas are Mexican, aren't they? I think. So, anyway, what's the most traditional shape for one at Christmas? It's not a donkey. Although that would be fairly Christmassy, a donkey, wouldn't it? Yeah, anyway, question number two. What does Noleg Shona Duit mean in English? I'm not even telling you what language that is, but you've got to tell me what it means. Best of luck. Especially because my pronunciation probably didn't help in the least. Noleg Shona Duit. Okay, next one. Pohutukawa is a special Christmas tree in which country? Pohutukawa. Yeah? Do you know what? I'm not happy with any of those three questions, won't lie to you. Yeah, right, next one's all about music, though. Right, when you hear this question, you're going to be really annoyed. But it's multiple choice. And then you'll be like, oh, actually, that's quite easy. So, here's the question. This is about Top of the Pops, okay? Top of the Pops used to be this weekly TV show about pop music. They ended it in the early 2000s, I think. I still think that was a mistake. I still think they should have kept it going. But anyway, they still have it on Christmas Day, although I'm not sure if it was on this Christmas Day, you know. I feel like it wasn't on. It was the year before. Anyway, what year was the first Top of the Pops Christmas special broadcast? Was it? Right, you ready? 1864, 1919, 1964, or 2004? See, I made it easy for you. You're there getting all annoyed, and they found out how easy it is. Question number... Oh, up to five. Goodness me. True or false? In 1966, the Top of the Pops Christmas special was split into 7 parts and shown every day over Christmas week. Is that true? Is that false? It's a true or false question. Next one. What song was kept off the number one spot by Band-Aid's Do They Know It's Christmas? That's the first recording of Band-Aid, okay? It's a very famous song. It was kept off the number one spot. What was it? Okay, next one. What anniversary did the Christmas number one celebrate in 2021? So, yeah, you know, you got the charts. And then in the UK, more than any other country, it seems, the Christmas number one's a real big thing. But what anniversary did they celebrate in 2021? Was it the 50th, 60th, 70th or 80th anniversary? Okay, fine. Right, next one. What song links Boney M and Harry Belafonte? Hope you found that one easy. I won't lie to you, I found all these previous ones reasonably tricky. Next one. How many times has Do They Know It's Christmas topped the charts and in which years? You don't have to give me the years. Okay, I know the years, but you don't have to. Just got to tell me how many times. Okay? Okay? Answer me then. Okay, that's right. And the last one. This is not about music. What is the blanket in Pigs in Blankets? What's the blanket? Now, hold on. I think in some countries, they don't have the same blanket we have. This is what blanket do we have in the UK? Okay? No, UK, not okay, UK. UK? Okay. Well, here come your answers. I hope you did very, very well. Question number one. What is the most traditional shape for a Mexican Christmas piñata? I didn't have a clue. I didn't have a clue. Well, I can tell you, it's a seven-pointed star. Yeah. Question number two. What does Noleg Shona Duit mean in English? Well, it's Gaelic and it means Merry Christmas. Now, you didn't have to say it was Gaelic. If you said Merry Christmas, you get the point. Congratulations. Okay, next one. Pohutukawa is a special Christmas tree in which country? Well, here's the thing. I thought it was Hawaiian, but it's not. It's actually New Zealand. And that's really annoying because I've actually spent a Christmas in New Zealand. Yeah. Okay, next one. What year was the first Top of the Pops Christmas special broadcast? Well, I told you it was a TV show, so it definitely wasn't 1864 or 1919. And I also told you it finished in the early 2000s, so it had to be 1964, didn't it? Easy one. Okay, next one. True or false? In 1966, the Top of the Pops Christmas special was split into seven parts and shown every day over Christmas week. I said that was false, and you know what? It was false, but it was split into two parts. Yeah. Okay, next one. What song was kept off the number one spot by Band-Aid's Do They Know It's Christmas? Well, to be honest, pretty much every other song that was out at the time, really. Isn't it? They've all kept off. Well, were they? I suppose they were kept off. If you're in second, you're only kept off by one song. If you're in third, you're kept off by two songs. Which song was kept off the number one spot only by Band-Aid's Do They Know It's Christmas? And I've mentioned this before, maybe not the last episode, but possibly the episode before, that Last Christmas by Wham never made it to number one when it was first released because it was held off by Band-Aid. So that's the answer. Okay, next one. What anniversary did the Christmas number one celebrate in 2021? Was it the 50th, 60th, 70th or 80th? My guess was 70th. You know what? Boom. I was right, which means the first Christmas number one would have been in 1951. Yeah, didn't know that. Well, I do now, and so do you. Okay, oh, next one. What song links Boney M and Harry Belafonte? Well, it is Mary's Boy Child. Yeah, Mary's Boy Child, Jesus Christ, was born on Christmas Day. Yeah, okay, this is a difficult one, right? Because the question is, how many times has Do They Know It's Christmas topped the charts and in which years? Well, it topped the charts as the Christmas number one three times. It doesn't say as a Christmas number one, it says how many times. But in the answers, they've only given it as three times. Yeah, so you've got the first Band-Aid, 1984, then you got Band-Aid 2, which was 5 years later, 1989, then you got Band-Aid 20, which was the 20 year anniversary, that's 2004, but then they re-released it again in 2014 for Band-Aid 30, that's when the Ebola crisis was going on, and they changed the lyrics a bit. Yeah, so they didn't mention that one though, they've only mentioned the first three times. But here's the thing, this book came out in 2022. Well, don't you know it? In 2022, a chap called Lad Baby, who I've mentioned before on the podcast, he used to release a Christmas single every year. He released five, all five got to number one. Usually they're about sausage rolls. And he released a version, and that also got to number one and was the Christmas number one. So yeah, he did change the title though. The title was just changed to Food Aid by Lad Baby, rather than Do They Know It's Christmas by Band-Aid. So yeah, there you go. So I will accept four or five, but only if you know what you're talking about. If you're just having a guess, well, actually, I don't care. I'll tell you what, no, put it this way. If you had a guess and you said four, you got it. If you had a guess and you said five, you can't have it. Oh, go on, you can have it. I don't give a shit. Right, we've got one more question. What is the blanket in Pigs in Blankets? Well, I can tell you, kids, that is bacon. Yeah, you get a little sausage, you wrap it in bacon. There's your pig in blankets. Yeah. And it's a proper sausage as well, not like a hot dog sausage. It's a proper little chipolata wrapped in bacon. Delicious. Well, there was your answers, kids. I managed to score 8, would you believe? Yeah, I was expecting it to be a low scoring one, especially with those first 3 questions. But then I pulled it back with the music ones. So let me know your scores. You know what to do. Email me at totalchristmas@gmail.com. Just put the number of what you scored. That's all you got to do, boys and girls. Simple as that. Now let's do this.
Where are you, Christmas?
Where are you, Christmas? How about Edinburgh, Scotland? Total Christmas friend Martin Goodman drew our attention to Scotland's hilly capital with its medieval old town. He sent us photos of 2 local Christmas shops located on the historic Royal Mile. You can find the same cozy, magical atmosphere in Edinburgh that is associated with the holiday season. The Royal Mile runs through the heart of Old Town, creating a festive atmosphere and connecting the magnificent Edinburgh Castle with the equally splendid Palace of Holyrood House. The Old Town's narrow cobblestone streets and fairy tale spires make it look like you've stepped into a Dickens novel. And there you will find the Nutcracker Christmas Shop, a family-owned store known for its beautiful array of global Christmas decorations. From tartan reindeer to kilted Santas into ornaments shaped like Nessie, plus an impressive Nutcracker collection. In addition, Edinburgh's climate is cool most of the year, and with its misty mornings and looming castle, it has a wintry, storybook feel no matter the time of year, especially when the stone facades and shop windows are often wrapped in twinkling string lights. Now, right down that same quaint street is Ye Olde Christmas Shop, another charming Christmas-themed emporium also nestled on the Royal Mile. It is described as delightfully quirky and packed with tinsel, lights, music, pine scents, and all the classic Christmas decor. So, you can literally step into Christmas in Edinburgh whenever you like. Now, if you know of another Highlands and Heather-filled place with a frosty festive atmosphere, you pour it out to Jack, he'll raise it up to me, and together, we'll tell you where to find Christmas throughout the year.
Okay, Bob, I love you, but Edinburgh, where the f*** is Edinburgh? It's Edinburgh. Edinburgh, Bob, Edinburgh. The capital of Scotland is Edinburgh, Edinburgh. I tell you what you want to do, Bob, is get yourself over to Edinburgh and walk around saying, oh, I love it here in Edinburgh. See what the locals have to say about that. Goodness me. Otherwise, great work. And also, great work to Martin Goodman as well. He sent that through about those 2 shops, but he also sent me pictures of them as well. Yeah, there you go. Thanks for doing that, Martin. Now, Bob's already said this. I'm saying it now as well. Right? If you know anywhere there's Christmas all year round, let me know. It doesn't have to be a massive village. You know, we will accept anything, really. If someone's got a Christmas tree in their front garden up all year, you can tell me about that. I don't care. Bob's the one who's got to talk about it. Thanks so much, Bob. Thanks so much, Martin. Now we're doing this. Your lugs, you'll love them. I'll love them, we'll love them. We all love the Yule Lugs, the Yule Lugs, the Yule Lugs, those Yule Lugs. Yeah! Boys and girls, I've also got to play this jingle.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a
humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
We haven't done one of these in far too long, boys and girls. This one is very interesting, okay? And it ain't that, when I say interesting, it ain't that interesting. But I've actually got three Yule Logs to talk about, but they're all A Christmas Carol related. So the first one I want to talk about is called A Christmas Carol Part 1 with Yule Log. And what this one is you've got the fire burning away. Yeah, lovely, lovely fire. Close up on the fire. It's just the fire, not the mantelpiece, just the fire in the hearth. And it's an audio play of A Christmas Carol performed by the Inland Stage Company for the Allegro podcast in 2010. Yeah, I've not heard of the Allegro podcast, but I have heard of the year 2010. It was 15 years ago, if I remember correctly. The audio play is actually quite good, but the problem is they've only got part one of it. I had a bit of a gander. I couldn't find part two. So that's it. They gave up. It sort of ends not long after Marley's ghost turns up. The film itself, like I said, is just the fire in the hearth, and it's on a 24-second loop. This one, I'm not recommending it, to be honest. It's not particularly relaxing, their audio play. It's a bit loud, a bit jarring in places. I didn't listen to the whole thing, couldn't be bothered. But I wasn't massively enamoured by it. But what you could do is, if you've got a version of the audiobook that you love listening to, then just chuck any old Yule Log on your TV, turn the sound off on that, and play the audiobook in the background. There you go, job's a good one. This one only runs for an hour and 8 minutes, like I said, because it's just part one, and it's only had 48 views, and it's been on there since 2019, so at this point that's like 6 years, and it's only got 48 views. Not a lot, is it? No. I mean, it's more than 47, but it is less than 49. So that was the first one. Now, the second one is called FX's A Christmas Carol Yule Log. Now, I have watched this, but I haven't talked about it on the show. Back in 2019, FX released a version of A Christmas Carol in association with the BBC. So it was shown in the BBC in the UK, starring Guy Pearce as Ebenezer Scrooge. It ran in three parts, and it was shocking. I'm not going to go into it now. I will do at some stage. I'm sort of building myself up to it. I mean, the production values were great. The story, I'll get upset about it another time, okay? But this one, what you've got is, you've got the Ghost of Christmas Past and Jacob Marley, and this is actually a scene taken from that show, and Jacob Marley is talking to the Ghost of Christmas Past. I'm not going to bother getting into it, okay? But he's talking to the Ghost of Christmas Past, and they're stood by this great big bonfire, and I'll play a little bit of the audio for you. This is what they say at the start.
I burn memories and old affections. And the ghosts of Christmas past, here to smoke out redemption.
Okay, that's what you get at the start. And then it's just the bonfire burning. And what's interesting is the fire's burning and you've got the two figures stood there, Jacob Marley and the Ghost of Christmas Past. They're frozen. They're not moving at all. The fire is burning, but the fire itself is only on a 3-second loop. Pretty sure of that. Anyway, I spent a while trying to catch when it started every time, and it was just 3 seconds. It runs for 30 minutes, and they play a bit of Christmas music in the back. Actually, it's not all Christmassy. Some of it was a bit dramatic and not Christmassy, and then it was Christmassy. And what's funny is, they put this on YouTube in 2020, a year after it was originally shown. And it's had, ready, 2,094 views since 2020. That's not many, is it? In fact, that's next to sod all. It ain't good anyway. It's naff. Well, it's just a bonfire. But you know what? I can't be bothered to say any more about that one. The third one's more interesting. Are you ready, kids? So this third one is called A Christmas Carol Yule Log Fireplace. And what it is, right, is you've got the fireplace. There's the fireplace. And you've got the fire burning. And then in the corner of the screen, like part of the scene, is a television. It takes up, this TV takes up, I'm going to say the screen takes up a maybe less than 10%, I reckon, of the screen. Maybe as much as 10%, but possibly less than 10% of the screen. So imagine, even if you've got it full screen, it's still only taking up a very small part of that. And what they're doing is they're showing four different versions of A Christmas Carol. Yeah, So the first one is only short, but the first three actually are only short. They all look about between 20 and 30 minutes. The first one I have covered before is a Basil Rathbone one. He plays Scrooge. And the bit that stood out to me with this one is this hat he wears all the way through is like a traffic cone. You might remember me talking about that in a previous episode. I have covered all of these versions that they've got showing on the TV screen. So they've got that one first. The second one, what I remember most about this one, two things. One is introduced and narrated by Vincent Price. Two, when the title comes up at the start, it says The Christmas Carol, not A Christmas Carol. And I remember being angry about it then. Well, I'm angry about it now, boys and girls. Then, after that one finishes, the next one comes up, and this is the Alastair Sim version, but not the original black and white one. This is the colour one from 1984. It's an animation. That's quite a good one, that was. I did enjoy that. It's only 20 odd minutes long, though, so they had to cut a lot out, but it's very atmospheric, so that was really good. But when you're watching it on this pissant little screen, in the corner of the whole Yule log thing, just watch the blooming film, really. And the last one is a Seymour Hicks version. And what was interesting about this one, they've colourised it. Yeah, so they're showing the colourised version. And I think I've mentioned this before. Every year I watch the Alastair Sim version, and the version I've got was given away in a newspaper many years ago, over 10 years ago, nearly 20 years ago. Yeah, I got the DVD with the newspaper, and it's the colourised version. So every year I watch the colourised version of the Alastair Sim version. This is the Seymour Hicks one, which is even older. And the thing I remembered most about this one is it's a really, really good adaptation. Apart from the fact that, the main thing I remember, Jacob Marley turns up, and he's invisible. So it's just this disembodied voice, right? And Scrooge is staring at a chair, and Jacob Marley says, "Only you can see me." It's like, there's no one else there, mate. Of course he's the only one that can see you. He should have said, "Only you can see me." So the people watching in the cinemas or at home on their TV screens, this is probably before films were shown on TV, they can't see me. That bit really annoyed me. There was no need for it. All you need to do is get a bloke, put some white stuff on him. You got Jacob Marley. Give him some chains as well. Yeah, that really annoyed me. Anyway, so this version, it runs in total for 2 hours and 13 minutes, and the fireplace on it is a 20 minute loop. And what I really liked about that, the fact that the fire is on a 20 minute loop, is you actually see it burning down. But then, after 20 minutes, because it's burnt down so much, when it goes back to the start of the loop again, you sort of see it, you know, reform quickly. And this one, it's been on there since 2019, and it's had 1,256 views, and that's it. Yeah, so none of those are particularly popular, but I thought I'd talk about it, and I have done. Yeah, so now I can move on. If you do want to watch any of them, I don't recommend it, but if you do want to watch any of them, I'll put links in the show notes. There you go. Now we're doing this. What the dickens? Yeah, boys and girls, I haven't done one of these in a while, and you're probably thinking, does he ever stop going on about A Christmas Carol? And the answer to that is clearly no. No, I don't. Try living with me. How do you think my wife feels? Anyway, I'm talking about three bits today, and the first one is this. Have a listen.
Scrooge said that he would see him. Yes, indeed he did. He went the whole length of the expression and said that he would see him in that extremity first. "But why?" cried Scrooge's nephew. "Why?" "Why did you get married?" said Scrooge. "Because I fell in love." "Because you fell in love," growled Scrooge, as if that were the only one thing in the world more ridiculous than a Merry Christmas.
Okay, now this is the thing. It's always bugged me. Right, you're having this conversation about Christmas, right? Coming around for dinner, all that lot, yeah? And then suddenly he goes, "Why'd you get married?" It's like, what has this got to do with anything? I remember two of my mates having an argument in the pub one time. I can't remember what they were arguing about, but one of them suddenly goes, "Yeah, and you're shit at darts." It's like, what has that got to do with anything you're talking about? But he just had a go at him out of nowhere about being crap at darts. And that's kind of what I think of this. All of a sudden, Scrooge is like, "Why'd you get married?" Well, here's the thing. The getting married bit is about how wealthy Scrooge thinks his nephew is. English economists at the time believed that no one should get married until one had sufficient income to support a family. Now, this is also touched upon when Scrooge splits up with Belle. You see, I've talked about this before, and it says in the book she's wearing mourning clothes, which means one of her parents has died, and she refers to herself as being dowerless, which means she's got no parents to pay a dowry towards the wedding. And she says, you know, would you have sought me out now, a poor dowerless girl? So Dickens is suggesting that this Scrooge now has the same opinions as these English economists who believe that you need to have plenty of money before you could get married and poor people shouldn't marry. And Bell says, our contract is an old one. It was made when we were both poor. Which means that Scrooge did ask her to get married, or at least to be engaged, when they were poor. Now she's poor, he's got plenty of money, and so now she lets him out of the contract. And as you read the book, he is quite happy to let her out of the contract. And Dickens also talked about this in the book The Chimes. That was, I don't know if it was his next Christmas book. It wasn't very good. I've got it. I've read it a couple of times and just don't really care for it. But there's a bit in it. One of the characters, a Mr. Filer, he's a political economist, and he states, when referring to young couples, there's no more hope to persuade them that they have no right or business to be married. Now, at the time, critics of Dickens and his writing supported Mr. Filer's words and his views, believing that it was irresponsible to encourage poor people to marry. So it's nice that in the book, when Scrooge says, why did you get married, suggesting that he was too poor to be married, his nephew turns around and says, because I fell in love. And this was a time when people didn't necessarily marry for love, not as much as they do these days. And the upper classes believed that poor people shouldn't marry unless they had sufficient funds to care for a family. So having read about this, I understand why Dickens was keen to make that point, and he does make it twice in the book. But I do feel like he shoehorned it in there a little bit. And much as I love the book A Christmas Carol, that's one of the bits that's always jarred with me. But at least now we know why Scrooge says it. The second bit I want to talk about, let me play a little bit for you. Have a listen to this.
The Lord Mayor, in the stronghold of the Mite Mansion House, gave orders to his 50 cooks and butlers to keep Christmas as a Lord Mayor's household should. And even the little tailor, whom he had fined 5 shillings on the previous Monday for being drunk and bloodthirsty in the streets, stirred up tomorrow's pudding in his garret, while his lean wife and baby sallied out to buy the beef.
Now this bit talks about where the little tailor, his wife, has gone out to buy the beef. Now, you think, yeah, I know what beef is, or I know what beef is, but this is an interesting bit, because originally, when Dickens wrote it, in his first draft, the wife had gone out to buy a goose. But Dickens decided that that was a little bit too extravagant, so he changed it to beef. So the hierarchy pretty much goes, at least in A Christmas Carol, beef's at the bottom, goose in the middle, but if you've got plenty of cash, turkey, that's the top one. Interesting aside, at Christmas you can buy a goose in like supermarkets and that, a frozen one, and it's more expensive than a turkey. Yeah, you don't get as many geese as turkeys these days. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting that he decided to change that little bit. Now the last piece, have a listen to this.
The owner of one scant young nose, gnawed and mumbled by the hungry cold as bones are gnawed by dogs, stooped down at Scrooge's keyhole to regale him with a Christmas carol. But at the first sound of God bless you, merry gentlemen, may nothing you dismay, Scrooge seized the ruler with such energy of action that the singer fled in terror.
Now, I don't know if you noticed that, but here's the thing. That song doesn't go, God bless you, merry gentlemen, may nothing you dismay. It says, God rest ye, merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. But I've checked all my versions of A Christmas Carol, and that's what Dickens wrote, and I don't know why. And no one seems to know why he changed the words. Maybe he was just scribbling it down and wasn't paying attention. I don't know, maybe he thought that's what the words were, or maybe even back then, the words weren't set in stone like they are these days. At the time, God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen was one of the most popular carols, so that's the one Dickens decided upon for the little carol singer to be singing. But for some reason, the words he wrote down aren't the ones we sing today. Now, another little aside I want to make about this is that the following year, there were a number of stage plays came out of A Christmas Carol. I don't think many of them were actually authorised by Charles Dickens, but one of these versions, it was called A Christmas Carol or Past, Present and Future, and it was by Edward Sterling. He changed the words to Bless, Bless You, Merry Gentlemen. So he still got the words wrong, but he got rid of the God and replaced it with Bless. Because, and I've mentioned this before, Although in books you could write about God, on stage you couldn't say the word God. So that's why, on the stage show, they changed the words to Bless, bless you, merry gentlemen. Which makes you think, if they had like carol singers on stage in a theatre, would they have to change all the words? I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, I hope you found those three interesting. Just three little quirks you might not have been aware of in A Christmas Carol. But now, boys and girls, we're doing this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
Today's soup of the day at the Tiki Bar? We have whiskey with some ice croutons. So in 1997, the band No Doubt covered the Vandals song Oi to the World for the compilation album A Very Special Christmas 3, which benefited the Special Olympics. It is a fun alternative Christmas song, unique with its upbeat punk tempo, ska horns, catchy melody, and a plot about a British gang fight. The song's title is a play on Joy to the World, and it tells the story of a Christmas Day rooftop brawl between punks, led by Haji, and skinheads, headed by Trevor. Now, this may not sound like it has the appropriate holiday spirit, but you're wrong. For you see, Oi to the World describes a Christmas miracle that occurs after the fight gets violent. Trevor is seriously injured, but he is abandoned by the other skinheads. And as the lyrics describe, but then Haji saw the North Star shining more than ever, so he made a tourniquet from his turban, saving Trevor. They rappelled down the roof with the rest of the turban and went back to the pub, where they bought each other bourbon. See? The lyrics emphasize that even amidst this gang violence and hate, acts of kindness and compassion can bridge cultural divides. It ultimately provides a message of acceptance in symbolizing reconciliation and unity. Although Oi to the World uses this uplifting metaphor of a Christmas confrontation to highlight the spiritual themes of overcoming racial conflict, you might still wonder, why am I discussing this in Do You Hear What I Hear? Well, when they sing, Oi to the Punks and Oi to the Skins, but Oi to the World and Everybody Wins, it may seem like a small matter, but as an American, I thought they were using the Yiddish expression, Oi, which is short for Oy vey. This is a common phrase used in the States to indicate dismay or disappointment and was often heard on the 1990 sitcom The Nanny. It can be translated to mean oh darn or woe is me to indicate things are not going well. What I didn't realize is this two-letter utterance, Oy, is not the word I thought it was. I was surprised to discover that Oi, as used in the song, refers to a type of music. Oi is a form of punk rock in the UK, popular with skinheads, that originated in the late 1970s. The music is associated with those disaffected, loud, working-class London youth, mostly boys, but was also used in songs by Blur in the 1990s and More Fire Crew in the early 2000s, demonstrating its appeal to new generations. Some relate Oi to being used in the callback response fashion of punk bands, like the Ramones do with Hey Ho, Let's Go. I also found that Oi has many different meanings for Brits. The word was originally hoi and used by the British Navy, which was similar to ahoy. The first published reference was from the Evening Standard in 1937, which read, Oi, there's a lady here? Wants some juice on the knocker. I am not even sure what that means. In the same year, it also appeared in the lyrics of a song from Me and My Girl, a musical about a Cockney boy who becomes an Earl. Oi has been particularly associated with Cockney speech. In the Cockney dialect of London, the H sound is often dropped, leading to the pronunciation of hoy as oi. A study of the Cockney dialect in the 1950s noted that oi was an expression that is jaunty and self-assertive, as well as intensely Cockney. Oi in Cockney English can also be used as a cry of surprise or pain, or as a call or greeting used to aggressively get someone's attention. Depending on the context, it can also convey urgency. It is common to shout oi to get someone's attention, for example, when they're on the other side of the street, or as a way to show annoyance, like when trying to get someone to stop if they hit your car and drive off. In addition, you can often hear it shouted in streets and at sporting events overseas, but you don't hear it in the U.S. All I know is that if a skinhead was shouting oi at me from across the street, I might start to run. Oy vey. Cheers and happy Christmas.
I tell you what, he's knocked it right out of the park with that one, because I just assumed that everyone used the word oi when they're shouting at someone in the street. And I mentioned it to my wife and she's like, yeah, thinking about it, when you're watching a film and someone's shouting at someone in the street, what do they shout? And I was thinking, well, maybe they just shout, hey. But in the UK, if you're shouting at someone, you go, oi! Yeah, all the time. Walking down the street, just shouting oi at everyone. Well, maybe not. But if you do shout at someone, you do say oi. Great work. Now, boys and girls, Bob has his own podcast, as you know, because I tell you every episode. It's called Festive Foreign Film Fans, where him and his mate Mark talk about Christmas films from other countries. Check it out. It's very, very good. Now we're doing this. So a couple of episodes ago, I did a little section where I talked about a Christmas memory of mine, and it was when my daughter Robin was there after Father Christmas had come. And I knew this was going to be a short episode because I've been away and I haven't had a chance to watch another version of A Christmas Carol. So I thought, do you know what? Why don't I give another memory to fill the space up? That's all this is. It's just filler, kids. But I want to tell you about my history of carol singing. Of course, at Christmas, you know, you go to church for the carol services and that. That's always nice. But I'm talking about door-to-door caroling. Now, the first time was when I was a member of the Scouts. I was a Boy Scout, and we used to have a Christmas camp. And that would involve going off for a few days. You wouldn't be camping. You'd be staying in like a hall or something. So normally another scout hut somewhere else, like fairly nearby, and they'd let us use their scout hut and we'd all sleep in there. Because we were older, they'd just sort of leave us to it. So they'd sort of drop us off, and some of the older boys were meant to be in charge. They'd look after us. And we just do our thing, really. Yeah, I can't remember how long Christmas camps used to be. I think it was normally like 2-3 nights. Anyway, one year we've gone away, not far actually. At the time it seemed like it was miles away. It was only about a half hour drive from where I lived. We're staying in this scout hut. And one night, someone had the bright idea, I think it might have been me, actually. Someone had the bright idea that we go out carol singing. So that's what we did. We went out door to door around the streets of this village, just singing carols, yeah. Now, there was about, I can't remember. I could sort of picture who was there, most of the guys. So maybe we'll say there's 10 of us. It might have been, maybe 8 to 10 of us. Maybe, yeah, I think it was more than that. And when the people were there on their doorsteps, like, what are you collecting for? I said, us. But luckily, all the other boys said, scouts, which we hadn't chatted about. And we weren't dressed in our scouts uniforms either, actually. We were just there in our civvies. But yeah, luckily, the other boys drowned me out when they all said scouts, which didn't even cross my mind. And I can't remember how much money we got, but I remember we had a laugh. We probably got less than a quid each altogether. But yeah, that was the first time. I would have been about 14 then, I'm going to guess. Yeah, maybe 13. That was the first time. And then, 4 years later, me and a bunch of my mates decided we were going to go carol singing as a bit of a money spinner. Now, we used to live in this village, and one of my mates' mums worked for a charity. So he said, oh, I can get some of her charity collecting tins. So we got those. So we looked the part. And another mate said, my dad's got a Santa suit because my mum does childcare and she's got a Santa suit that we could borrow. And I wrote out loads of carols on my computer and printed them out. So we all had song sheets. And we were 17 years old, just coming up to 18. And we went door to door around our village singing carols. Yeah, we went two nights on the trot, actually. The first night, I remember my mate, who's 6'5", was wearing the Santa suit. Yeah. He didn't look happy in it, but you couldn't really see his face because he had the beard. And he was stood at the back. He wasn't much of a singer, so he was just stood at the back. And we'd all be there bellowing our songs, but we were singing all sorts. It weren't just carols. We were singing things like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Yeah, that was pretty much a crowd pleaser, that one. Good Christian Men Rejoice, that was fantastic. Good Christian Men Rejoice with hearts and souls. We were belting it through that one. And then a couple of times, we didn't do this every time, but everyone would be lined up and I was stood at the back. Every house would get three carols and everyone would be lined up. I was stood behind them and we'd do two carols and then everyone would separate and I'd walk down the middle singing White Christmas. Seriously. Like doing a solo. I remember we did it at this bloke's house. One minute he's just with a smile on his face watching these lads singing carols. And the next minute he's like, what's going on? What is happening now? So I walked down the middle singing White Christmas, crooning to him. Yeah. We made quite a lot of money, actually. Now, I can't remember the exact figures, but this was the deal, okay? We did give half the money to the charity, which you might think, oh, well, you should have given the whole lot. Yeah, we should have, but we didn't. And I'll tell you what, there's a lot of people that do charity collecting that are paid to do charity collecting. So it's the same sort of thing, really. I cannot for the life of me remember how much money we raised. I do remember one of the houses we went in, the bloke answered the door, was like, come on in. He was having a Christmas party. He ran a chip shop in town and all his staff were there. He had a house party with all his staff and they're all sitting around and he got us to come in and sing Christmas carols for him. Yeah, and the thing was, two of the girls that were there, we knew from college. So they're going, all right, how you doing? And we're like, oh, you know what, let's just sing our songs and get out of here. Yeah, so there you go. I'd love to know how much money we made. I can't remember for the life of me. So we give 50% of it to the charity and then we divvied the rest up between all of us. Yeah, and we did it two nights on the trot. The second night, we were all a bit jaded by the first night. The first night was all exciting and all adrenaline filled. The second night, not quite so exciting. But there was a guy that came the second time that hadn't gone the first night. And he was full of beans. And he's the one that wore the Christmas suit. And he was running around all excited. So there you go, boys and girls. That's my experience doing door-to-door Christmas caroling. Now, that was my experience was singing Christmas carols door to door, but I've also had the experience of Christmas carolers coming to my house and knocking on the door, and I can only remember one specific occasion. I'm sure it's more than once or twice this happened, but back where I used to live, we lived up like a quiet little lane. It was just off the sort of main road, so you wouldn't get much foot traffic up that way. But one night, coming up to Christmas, the doorbell rang, I opened the door, and there was three lads stood there, probably in their mid-teens, and they all started singing We Wish You a Merry Christmas. So I stood there. This is back when I was living at home with my parents. I would have been early 20s. I stood there with my arms folded while they went through We Wish You a Merry Christmas. And I was like, is that it? And they're like, yeah. I was like, I want a Christmas carol. And they were like, what? I was like, well, what do you know? Dunno. And I was like, all right, give me Silent Night. And they started Silent Night. One of them was actually giving it his best shot. The other two were just looking a bit sheepish. He got about halfway through the first verse and then like couldn't remember any more words. And that was it. I gave him a quid. I was like, get out of here, boys. And that was it. There you go. They seemed to be quite happy. I'd love to know how much money they made that night, though. Yeah, there you go, boys and girls. That's my experience with Christmas caroling. Or at least my experience with Christmas caroling so far. I'm going to train those two daughters up of mine, and one year we're going to go out singing door to door. Possibly this year, probably not though. Now let's do this. Do you know what? I'm sorry to say I haven't got a recommendation this week. Yeah, I haven't. I'm just listening to the same old podcast. And I mentioned before that me and the wife have just started watching The Sopranos, haven't we? So that's going to keep us busy for a good few weeks. So, yeah, I guess that's the end of the show. I want to say a big thank you, of course, to Bob Baker and also Martin Goodman again for sending through his Where Are You Christmas idea. Also, everyone that sent in your quiz scores, don't forget to do the same this week. I need to know what you've scored. These are the things I need to know. The email address is totalchristmas@gmail.com. If you want to go on the website, I wouldn't recommend it. That's totalchristmaspodcast.com. I really hope you've enjoyed the show. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. But in the meantime, you know I love you. Merry, happy Christmas.
So, good news. I saw a dog today. Have you seen a dog? You probably have.